Hello, property nomads. Hope you're doing well. Happy New Year, belated Happy New Year, I should say. I'm delighted to be joined today by Mark Winship of Gateway Accommodation. We're going to be talking a lot about elite sports coaching and how that's influenced apart hotels and other bits and pieces to do with property. And it's part of a series of more interviews because we realised we didn't do too many in 2023, but we've got a lot ready for 2024. So looking forward to cracking in. But Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, likewise. And we mentioned briefly off air about your background being in elite sports coaching before getting involved in property. Don't appreciate it's the Property Nomads podcast, but I like to dive in into what people were doing beforehand. So how did you get involved in elite sports coaching, and how is that then correlated into property?
Yeah, it seems like a strange link, doesn't it, in some ways? But no, I trained as a tennis player, as an aspiring professional tennis player when I was a youngster. So that was a big part of my life. That was my sort of main focus around school and things like that as a youngster, and gave it my best shot, did a bit of traveling with tennis, didn't quite reach the level that I needed to in order to make a career out of it. But it kind of naturally led me into coaching tennis in particular, and performance coaching. So I did my university degree at Loughborough University, which is a sort of hotbed for sports and sports performance. And I kind of fell into coaching in my final year. And yeah, I was lucky enough to work with some of the top sort of rising talent, junior talent in this country. So we traveled the world. We played some of the top kind of junior grand slams. So I was lucky enough to sit courtside at Wimbledon and bits and pieces like that. And that sort of naturally led me to coaching coaches and managing tennis academy programs. So as I went through my coaching career, I did less and less of the sort of on-court work and the travel work, and more of the sort of managing the tennis academy business and running a team of coaches and things like that. But it's quite an all-consuming passion project, if you like, performance coaching, because as you can imagine, you know, you're fully invested. You reach a point where, you know, I was quite consistently taking kind of 7, 8 year old youngsters and turning them into kind of top players in Europe, aged sort of 13, 14 years old. But if you wanted to go any further than that with them, you were really facing the prospect of probably, I don't know, 30, 35 weeks on the road. And I had a young son at that point, and it just wasn't really part of my roadmap. It wasn't where I wanted to go with things, which is kind of where property started spooling up in the background, if you like, as just initially just an additional income stream, a passive income stream, if you like, that sort of started to tick along in the background. And we just started that off in a small way. But yeah, the sort of the work hours commitments and the pressures, if you like, of trying to keep a performance tennis academy business afloat started to take its toll. And that kind of coincided with my wife had a bit of a health scare. So she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She's fine now. She's into remission and everything. But you know, that really puts things in perspective. So all of this kind of went into the melting pot to make me think, actually, I need to make some changes here. And that's where we decided to start investing in property as a professional business, which we started to do back in 2016.
Okay, so a lot to uncork that. I'm glad your wife's in remission and good health and so forth. So that's important to hear, but thank you for sharing. So what I'm hearing is that successful, very successful at what you were doing, and then I don't want to say life gets in the way, but certain events happen, and then we have to look at changing things, and therefore you've made changes, and they say the rest is history. But when you say you got started investing in property, because getting started can mean different things to different people. So are we talking just a couple of buy-to-lets, local area, or were you up and down identifying different gold mine areas? How did you get started property-wise?
Yeah, so we had a buy to let. It's actually a small multi let, I guess, that we rented out to students in Loughborough. We'd had that for some time. My wife inherited a small amount of money that we used for the deposit, and we went about that in all the wrong ways, as I now know, if you're looking to scale a property portfolio. But it kind of whetted the appetite a little bit, you know, and it did start us thinking, actually, we're quite interested in this property game. No idea what that meant at the time, and the implications of that. But yeah, when kind of all these kind of life events kind of collided, and we decided to go for it, that we invested in our education, and we hit it pretty hard from that point. So absolutely, we spent a number of months kind of researching gold mine areas, looking at the best areas for us to invest to scale. And we actually settled upon Liverpool initially. So we were trekking 2.5 hours each way up to our investment area, and we did 7 HMO licensed HMO conversions in 18 months. So we hit it pretty hard. We were taking kind of two to three bedroom Victorian terraces and turning them into 6-bed licensed HMOs. So these were big back to brick development projects. Huge learning curve for us, having not undertaken any kind of property refurbishment in the past. It also meant that we had to get pretty skilled pretty quickly in raising money, and raising private finance in particularly. But we knew that if we were going to hit our financial security target figure, if you like, to allow me to step back from the certainly the frontline coaching aspect, that we would need to scale pretty quickly. So yeah, initially we started out in HMOs in the Midlands and in the Northwest. And that led us to the point where we reached the second phase of our property investment career, if you like, where we'd hit our financial security figure, or certainly mine anyway. So that allowed me to step back from the day-to-day coaching job and really start focusing on pushing the property business full time. And that's when we decided to start investing in serviced accommodation. So this was back at the beginning of, well, tail end of 2018 into the beginning of 2019. And that's now the mainstay of what we focus on from an investment point of view. We still have one of our HMOs, but other than that, we're fully invested in serviced accommodation and hotels.
With the HMOs, you say you've still got one of them. So is it a case of all the others have now been sold off to?
Yeah, it's still that first one, actually. We've still got that
Oh,
first
wow.
one in Loughborough. That one's still ticking along and still sits there and generates a nice little income stream. But yes, absolutely. We took the decision, having dipped our toes into serviced accommodation for probably best part of a year. We decided that was an area that we really wanted to scale up into, and we'd got our sights set quite firmly on doing a part hotel project. And in order to do that, it made sense that we would consolidate our portfolio. The HMOs were performing fine, they were doing well, they were cash flowing, but I think the realization hit that we could put that money to better use by investing that capital into the serviced accommodation business.
I'm glad you said that because that was going to be my next question. Where was everything performing well up in Liverpool? And you've answered that by saying it was. So going back to your elite coaching background. So what I'm trying to put together here is that because of that background, and I'm going to guess with goal setting targets, this is what we're looking to do. Here's the path from our ideal path from A to B. All of the stuff that comes with it. How have you adapted that, like mentality, mindset, etc., into your apart hotel business? By the way, for people listening, go and talk about property. Talk, we'll touch base a bit more on apart hotels in a second. Just trying to get that connection and correlation between goals, targets, and how you've managed to utilize the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I became fascinated towards the end of my coaching career, actually, in the concept of transferable skills, because the chances of any of the players that we were working with actually making it to the level where they could make a living out of professional tennis was so infinitesimally small that the plan A for most of our players was actually to get to the point where they could get a scholarship to either a UK university or a US university. And at that point, that would give them options, if you like, that should they not pursue a professional tennis career, they would have backup options academically. And it became clear that the tennis itself was providing our players with a lot of character skills, a lot of kind of mental skills, if you like, resilience, as you say, goal setting, discipline, time management, that were actually setting them apart from the rest of the population, if you like, and making their university applications and ultimately their job applications more attractive. So I've always been fascinated with that idea of transferable skills, and then found myself in the same boat where actually it might seem that the link between coaching tennis and property is a distant one, but actually the transferable skills that come with that in terms of the resilience, the ability to ride the emotional roller coaster of property. That certainly felt familiar with the kind of ups and downs of performance sport. But I think a lot of it comes down to, as you said, it's the ability to start with the end in mind, work out what the vision is, what are we actually aiming to create? Because I was lucky enough to work with tennis players who were supremely talented with a bat and ball, if you like. That was never going to be the differentiating factor that made them successful. And it same goes for property investors, right? There's, some come into it with money to throw at it, some come into it with time to throw at it. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the ones that go on to make a really successful career in property. And quite often, actually, it's the opposite. It's the ones without money and without time that actually make a real go of it. And that realization has kind of transferred through to property. And it's that ability, as I said, to start with the end in mind, create your vision, and but then make that turn that dream into a plan, if you like, by putting in the measurable steps that underpin all of that. So it's that kind of process that I find has transferred actually quite seamlessly from the world of sport into property.
I think on top of that, with people that are going to be listening to this, we get all sorts of people that are going to be very experienced, like yourself. You're going to get people that are, looking to start getting involved. And the key thing from all of this is, no matter whether you're doing a training course or you're listening to a podcast or this podcast and the things that we're doing, it's exactly what you said. You start with the end in mind. Why are you doing it? What's your reason? Obviously, for yourself, as you said before, there's family reasons, which I think for most people, it is normally some sort of family reason and all that stuff. You've got to do it because it's important, because it lays the foundations for future success, basically.
Absolutely. I think we talk a lot about focusing on your why and understanding what is your purpose and what is your drive. And I know there's a lot of kind of mindset stuff going around, this kind of law of attraction, all that side of things. And I worry about some of it, to be perfectly honest, because I think some of it lacks the substance. Like just willing something into existence isn't necessarily going to make it a reality. It's actually understanding how to visualize your future, how to create that vision, but actually turn that into actionable steps, measurable steps, because that's that action that you then take is what's going to make the difference, not the fact that you've dreamed up this, that we can all dream, right? It's what you then do in order to make that a reality. And I think that's what I've taken from the tennis world, really, is it's the implications for today, for Friday morning on the, what are we on, the 5th of January 2024, of your 5-year vision. What are the implications of that? What does that mean for me today in terms of the actionable steps that I have to take?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we started talking about law of attraction, that's probably a different podcast, to be fair, because we could go down the rabbit hole on that. But I understand where you're coming from, and I agree to an extent. All of that being said, then let's go on to Apart Hotels. There's what people are here to listen to, and I'm here to learn a lot as well. So, just in layman's terms, what is an apart hotel, and how do you go about either finding one or renovating a property so it becomes one?
So an apart hotel is essentially a hotel, or most often a converted guest house. That's usually what we're looking for, where we have I'd probably best to start with our shopping list, if you like. So what do we look for when it comes to apart hotel? So typically what we're looking for is a guest house or a bed and breakfast where the owners live on site. They're running it as a lifestyle business. They're drawing their livelihood, if you like, their wage from the business. And that has a few implications. That has an implications on how optimized the trading business is, but also how optimized the space is, because the likelihood is they will have at least a certain percentage of the floor space dedicated to their owner's accommodation, to ancillary space like guest dining room if they do breakfasts, a guest lounge, that sort of thing. So what we're looking to do is to take owner-occupied guest houses and we convert them into modern, smart apart hotels. And what I mean by that is we take the owner's accommodation, we take the ancillary space, and we convert that into additional guest rooms, if you like. And then we replace the bed and breakfast element with self-catering facilities in as many of those rooms as is practically possible. And that effectively creates kind of small studios or small apartments within a self-contained block, where we offer automated self-check-in. We have a digital concierge service, so it's all remotely managed. We manage all of our apart hotels from a good 4 hours away. We've got a team that sort of manages that remotely. But that's really the model in a nutshell, is it's taking that unoptimized space from an income point of view so that you can maximize the cash flow, but also you can maximize the commercial value of the property when you come to refinance, having done the conversion. And that's a key part to the equation. I know there are lots of people out there that are claiming to do the apart hotel strategy in inverted commas, and really they're just decorating a guest house. And in all intents and purposes, it's still a guest house. They might have converted the owner's accommodation into additional rooms, but for me, the real secret is to find a guest house where you can convert a significant percentage of the existing space into more income generating space, if you like. And that's going to add to the income and that's going to add to the commercial valuation. So this wasn't our first venture into serviced accommodation. I wouldn't suggest it would be for most people, because a lot of the lenders will need to see track record, and it's a much bigger proposition. But our forays into serviced apartments, multi-unit blocks of serviced apartments and holiday rentals kind of led us naturally to looking at how can we scale up, and apart hotels seem to be the logical next step for us. And it is a great way to scale if you're in that situation.
In terms of and again, I like to ask as I call sort of dumb questions, just so I want to try and get the concept through to everyone that's listening. So there might be people listening to this are thinking, well, Mark, that sounds great, but that sounds like a HMO. Or Mark, okay, I understand that, but actually to me that sounds like serviced accommodation. So how can you, again, for people listening, how can you define that difference between what you've just said and what people might think of a HMO and serviced accommodation?
The HMO definition is quite straightforward, because it's never going to be the principal prime residence of anybody that stays there. This is short stay accommodation. We take bookings rather than sign tenancy agreements. This is for short stay. So our typical market that we like to tap into, our typical guest avatar, if you like, for our apart hotels, is short to medium working stays. So someone who is on a short-term working contract or visiting the area for work, not long enough to warrant securing an AST on a property, but they're there just to, and quite often we're introduced to those kind of guests through platforms like Airbnb and booking.com, and then our job is to convert them into sort of direct booking clients. But it's essentially not an HMO because it's not their principal prime residence, and we're quite clear on that definition when people book to stay with us. With regards to serviced accommodation, it does sort of occupy a middle ground, if you like, between a full-on serviced apartment and a hotel, because clearly there are certain expectations that come with a hotel. When someone books a hotel, they might expect their linen to be changed on a daily basis, when they're out at work or whatever. And we don't do that. We operate much more like a serviced apartment like that. We do an end of stay clean, and we can do a mid stay clean on request, or if there's a longer booking. So it does sort of straddle both It's sort of it's a hotel when you want it to be a hotel, and it's a serviced accommodation when you want it to be serviced accommodation. But when you look at it strictly by the book from a planning perspective, and this is one of the things that I love about this model, the beauty of targeting existing guest houses and bed and breakfast is they already have the C1 planning use class, which is the appropriate use class for that, for this kind of model. And it also means that from a future-proofing perspective with regards any future regulation that might come into the industry or whatever, hotel planning use class is kind of protected and sits separate from that. And it also means that we're not then bogged down in lengthy planning applications for change of use and all that side of things. So I like to keep it simple when I can. I know there are lots of people doing good stuff in commercial conversions to apart hotels, but for me, if I can find something that's already got the appropriate planning use class and then just optimize it better, both from a space perspective and a business model, then for me, that makes the most amount of sense.
I'd concur with that. It does, keep things simple. I think there's a quote a while ago that I picked up, and it was simplicity is the real freedom. So if you're keeping things simple, it will just help. Now, I think thank you for that. I think that helps to clarify, because I just know there's going to be people listening going, hang on a minute, this does. But thank you for clarifying that. Talking of planning then, and talking of keeping things simple, I'll ask a contrarian question. Have you ever in one of your projects not apart hotels, I should say, have you ever had to go through planning for C1? And if so, how did that go? Give us an insight into the wonderful world of planning, if you can.
Well, it's funny you should ask, because it's a hot topic for us right at the moment. So we've actually in the middle of a planning application, which we didn't necessarily expect to find ourselves in. We secured a hotel on a lease option, which we're currently operating and running. And the history of that property is quite a murky one. The current owners that we have the lease and purchase option with have bought the property as part of a chain of hotels from the receivers. It was a chain of hotels that unfortunately collapsed under a bit of a cloud. Seemingly, the previous owner was using it to fund his super yachts habit. So a lot of stuff has come out in the wash in terms of how various monies were embezzled from the company and this, that, and the other. So actually ascertaining the planning history of this property has not been as straightforward as we would have liked, and it's essentially come out in the wash, now that we already have the lease in place, that the previous owner didn't seek the appropriate planning use class change when he changed it from a care home 7 years ago. The council have enforced the full 10-year requirement for grandfather rights, so we're not eligible to just get a certificate for lawful use, unfortunately, which is where we thought we were going to be, and they've kind of like reversed their position on that. So we're currently in a we have an application in for a retrospective change of use to C1, so a slightly more unconventional one, a slightly more complicated one, and we have every confidence that that will proceed as planned. As we said, it's operated without objection from the council anyway for the last 6 or 7 years. And so it's just going through that process, but it does throw up other things that we had hoped we wouldn't have to contend with, like nutrient neutrality and things like that, because we're effectively having to do the previous owner's job for them now in terms of justifying that the new use as a hotel doesn't place an excessive loading on the wastewater system compared to its previous use as a care home. All the stuff they should have done when they did that, we're now faced with having to do that. So yeah, that's a hot topic at the moment.
No, I sort of half regret asking the question now, to be honest. But thank you again. Thank you for sharing. So I think what I take from that is sometimes it doesn't really matter how much due diligence you do, that sometimes a spanner in the works is just a spanner in the works, and it might just come out of nowhere. And this sounds like what's happened with this particular project.
Absolutely. And it's exactly that. And I've said the same thing to so many people recently, that until you actually get your boots in the trenches, as it were, and start to work through it all, there's always stuff that's just going to come out in the wash. And it's then your ability to problem solve and your ability to kind of take that in your strides mentally, emotionally. I talked about the emotional roller coaster earlier. That's certainly what it feels like sometimes. But it's also about having the right team around you. It's having a power team that that you can lean on. That, you know, as investors, we don't need to know the answers to. I'd never heard of nutrient neutrality. That's never been an issue for us before this project, and now I feel like I'm a semi-expert on it. But that's because I've surrounded myself with people who are experts in that. So we don't have to know the answer to everything. We just have to know people that do, right? So it's about building your team. And I think that gives you the confidence then that if you do get these curveballs, that you're surrounded with people that you can turn to.
And this is exactly why, when you're starting out or as you're growing, the importance of power team, power team, power team. This is why people ram it down your throats almost and say power team is vital to your success.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, very much so.
In terms of then moving forward, and we spoke about goals, and you said that you mentioned earlier on that your basic financial security has been taken care of. So what goals do you have at the time of recording? What are you aiming for?
So we still have ambitious plans for our service accommodation business, particularly actually now branching out to manage holiday lets and potentially hotels. We already manage an apart hotel on behalf of some other investor landlords. So we're really branching out on the management side of things. So we recently launched a management company in one of the areas where we operate down in the New Forest, down in Hampshire. So State New Forest is our management company, and we're sort of pushing that side of things quite hard this year. We've got ambitious plans to bring a slightly more modern, slightly disruptive, if you like, approach to managing holiday rentals to what is quite a traditional market down in the New Forest. So we've got big plans for that, and we've really only just started to push the management side of things. And I know that managing properties on behalf of other landlords is often peddled in training courses as a great way to get started. If you don't have a lot of money, you know, don't worry about that. You can manage on behalf of other landlords. And that's never quite sat right with me, ethically, particularly not actually in serviced accommodation, when I feel like your knowledge of the local market, your knowledge of the serviced accommodation trends in general, and your having tried and tested systems is going to be absolutely critical. And if anything, I take the responsibility and obligation of managing someone else's property even more seriously than I do my own. And so actually it's taken a quite, you know, I've wanted to feel very, very confident that we have a well-oiled machine in terms of our systems, and we have an in-depth knowledge of the market and the trends and how it's worked, you know, having tested it on our own properties before we start rolling that out to other landlords, if you like. But that is a big focus for us this year. And I think, yeah, what once you go apart hotels, you never go back. And we're certainly on the lookout for more of those opportunities, looking at that exact kind of template, that exact kind of model. And I think I personally think we saw a lot of, unfortunately, we saw a lot of casualties during COVID. You know, we all know what COVID did to the hospitality industry. It was pretty horrendous. You know, a couple of the apart hotels that we've acquired were, you know, closed for the best part of 13 months. You know, they just weren't allowed to open. People thought we were crazy when we agreed to buy a hotel during the pandemic. But yeah, that's I genuinely think we're only just starting to see the fallout from that. I think there are a lot of lifestyle business owners in the hospitality space who have had to try and run their business uninterrupted for a year or two just to recoup some of the losses that they made during the COVID period in order to quit on their own terms, as it were. So I think there are lots of opportunities out there. It's I like it because it's not a crowded market. It's not a particularly competitive market. So there's scope to do some quite creative deals, whether it's lease options, or whatever it might be. There's real opportunities there. So yeah, we're from an acquisition perspective, apart hotels is still very much our focus.
Awesome stuff. Well, it's been, thank you very much for the insight. I mean, I've learned a lot, and I'm sure people listening have learned a lot as well. Mark, people that are listening to this, maybe they are already in the same sector that you are, or they might, know people with property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do people find you? How do people get in contact with you?
Yeah, so I'm on social media. So I'm actually coaching winners. So again, I draw from my coaching background. So that's my Instagram handle and TikTok. I'm coaching winners as well. So you can find me on both of those channels. And then people are more than welcome to contact me directly. My email is mark@staygateway.com. So that's mark@staygateway.com.
Fantastic. And we will put all of those links into the show notes as we always do. So we'll do that. Any other final words of wisdom, any words of encouragement for people looking to kickstart their 2024?
It's funny, I don't usually respond to these things on Facebook very often. I don't know what made me do it this morning, but something popped up on Facebook as you know, it's that time of year, isn't it, when people are looking at their New Year's resolutions and everything, and somebody asked the question, what's the most or the best piece of advice you've ever been given from a property perspective? And the thing that just jumped straight to mind for me is not to compare your journey to other people's. I think, you know, we started this conversation talking about starting with the end in mind and creating a vision for what you want to change and what you want to achieve within your life. And I find that when you get super clear on those things, property strategy, etc., all of that starts to fall into place relatively seamlessly. And it's very easy, isn't it, in the world of social media to bounce around and get distracted and think that the grass is greener on the other side, and you know, maybe I could try my hand at a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But I think the more that you can stay in your own lane, as it were, and keep that tunnel vision on your own objectives, whilst obviously drawing inspiration and learning from what other people are doing, but not being tempted to sort of to bounce around too much. So not comparing yourself to others, I think, is the main thing, whilst at the same time surrounding yourself with a community of like-minded people. So I run a property community, a property investment community called the Net Gain Club, and really that's the main ethos is to create a community of like-minded investors who are there to support each other, to drive each other on, to share, etc. So yeah, I think surrounding yourself with the right people, but staying focused on your objectives.
Fantastic. Well, a lot of actionable points there, and I just want to say thank you very A big thank you for your time. I say I've learned a lot. I'm sure everyone listening to this has as well. And good luck, and our paths might cross moving forward.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.